Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. Our mission is to capture the words and wisdom of the world's elderly so that their story and legacy may last forever. Like what we're about? Then be sure to subscribe to receive instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise Podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W Podcast as well. This episode features 97-year-old James Grigsby. James served in the military and was a farmer until he retired. He and his late wife had 6 children and now has several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. His story is one you do not want to miss. Without further ado, here is episode number 31.
Hello, my name is James Grigsby, and I'm 97 years old.
And James, you grew up in Cambridge City, right?
I grew up in Cambridge City, Indiana, yeah.
What was that area like when you were growing up?
Well, first of all, the little town I lived in, Cambridge City, there's a federal road that goes right down through that town, and the main street of that town is that federal road.
Oh.
It goes from D.C. to San Francisco. It goes clear across the country. So we had people going through there that came from all over this country.
Did you see any interesting people?
Well, you see a lot of interesting people, yeah, but never bothered me.
So what did the typical day in your childhood look like?
Well, just a small town thing where you went to school, or then after school where you just spent the evening riding bicycle around and see if you can get in trouble.
Did you have any hobbies when you were growing up?
Not too many, really.
Just riding your bike and...
I ride a bike all the time, y'all. Everything I did, I rode a bike.
You did a lot of models with your friends. You made airplanes and things.
My brother did that. I didn't get... He made model airplanes, and a friend of mine, but I never got... I made one or two, and that was about it. I just never get into it much.
Mm-hmm. So did you have 2 siblings, or how many siblings did you have?
I've got one brother that's a year older.
Okay.
And a sister that's 7 years younger.
Okay. So you were in the middle.
Yeah, I was in the middle.
What was it like being a middle child?
Well, it worked out all right, I guess. I've got quite a few of my grandkids that are in the same shape. Yeah, they're in the same shape. One time, my brother's a year older than I am, and a cousin that was a little younger than he was, they got born, and then I was born right after him. So me and my brother had a cousin between us.
Well, that was fun, I bet.
Yeah, same age. And that fellow's still living, too.
Really?
Yeah, he's still living now.
Would you say that you have a favorite childhood memory?
Oh, boy. Well... I had my dad's sister, an aunt, that didn't have any children. She lived on a farm, and she'd come up with birthday presents, I mean, parties and all that kind of stuff, just off and on, here and there. So I had some of that. My grandparents were kind of non-existent to me. My dad's mother and father, their grandparents are... I was only 3 years old and they were both gone.
Really?
Yeah, and my mother's dad had died before I was ever even born.
So I only
had one grandparent that was alive when I was 12 years old. Other than that, I didn't have any grandparents. If you grew up with no grandparents, which is a little different. The classmates in school are always talking about their grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have such a thing.
Yeah.
But I did have an awful lot of aunts and uncles that were the same age as those people were. So they were my grandparents, really.
And they all lived in the same town as you?
Yeah, they're all around there in the same county. They're farmers. Okay. My mother grew up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she grew up on... She had 5 of them. There's 3 boys and 2 girls in her family. And she grew up on that kind of family there in Wayne County.
Mm-hmm.
Those people were all older. In fact, my mother had an older sister that was 10 years older than she was, and she was 99, but she never made 100.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she got up to 99, but she never made 100.
Yeah, wow. So you said your mom grew up on a farm. Did you spend a lot of time on the farm as well, or no?
No.
With your aunts and uncles?
This aunt, my dad's sister that married this farmer, they didn't have any children at all, so... I would spend a lot of time with them out on the farm in the summertime, especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, when I got a little older, I just lived with them about all summer.
Really?
Yeah, I just stayed down there doing helping around out there on the farm.
Mm-hmm. And did you enjoy that?
I like to do that, be out there and do that. Now, my brother, he had my dad, too. Dad had a thing that weeds and everything just got him all choked up with stuff till he couldn't be around some things. Mm-hmm. Now, my brother had a little of that in him. He couldn't be getting hay or things like that. He just couldn't be with them, mm-hmm. getting messed up.
Allergies or something? Or
never bothered me doing that stuff.
Yeah.
But they actually, that aunt and uncle really turned out to be my grandparents is what it boiled down to. They just were my grandparents.
Yeah. And then what about your childhood friends? Do any of those, do you recall any particular memories with them, or could you talk a little bit about your kids or your friends from when you were a kid?
Well, yeah, I had a couple lived fairly close within a block of me, and in fact, there's two of them. One of them, his dad had grew flowers. He grew flowers.
Okay.
And the other guy's dad had a store where he sold mostly men's clothing, things like that, and that was just right across the street from my dad there in that little town of Cambridge City. My dad bought a drugstore in there. Well, it was actually the year I was born, mm-hmm. in 25. He bought a drugstore there, so he just spent his life. Druggists have to spend an awful lot of time in drugstores.
Yeah.
You have to keep them open. Mm-hmm. And so he spent a whole lot of time in there. This other clothing store is right across the street from him. So they were tied together pretty close, mm-hmm. close together.
Yeah. And I hear that you were the class president in high school?
Yeah, in senior year I was.
Did you enjoy that?
No, that was a little kind of a flaky thing, really, because right after I'd been elected that job, in January the 1st, I left Cambridge City School and went to Purdue.
Okay. So you left early?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the middle of the year. Well, I think the superintendent of the school there was married to a cousin of mine, so he's kind of family, a little bit of family. And he told me that in Christmas time, he said, "I've been checking your records, what you've done here in high school so far. And by the middle of the year, I had all the qualifications that the state says you have to graduate. I've been in all the different things."
Yeah.
I managed to do that by December. So now that to tie in with that thing is that now this is in 43, we're already in war, and the deal was as people weren't going to college like they had been. After they graduated from high school, they just spent the summer making some money to go to college in. So the colleges were hurting about getting students.
Uh-huh.
And so they finally, Congress woke up and says, "Hey, we're not going to have any college graduates here, male college graduates here, if we don't do something."
Yeah.
So guess what they come up with? They said, if you can get a degree from a college by the time you're 20 years old, we'll exempt you from the draft till you get it. They come out with that kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to find something to get the guys to
be college graduates.
Go to college.
Yeah.
So anyhow, because of that, why, here I am. I'm only 17 years old in this December when they got it worked around so that I could go up to Purdue. He checked with Purdue, and Purdue said they had no problem with taking me in up there to do this thing with.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, if you do that, you'll be able to get your college
degree you're 20.
By the time you're 20 years old.
Oh.
So that's why they did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which was a very unusual. I don't expect there's very many people in this United States had a semester of Purdue University when they were 17 years old.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Before you ever graduated from high school.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of a strange guy there.
Yeah.
Because of the way all that stuff worked out.
Mm-hmm. So did you end up getting that degree before you were 20?
Well, that was good. My brother, a year older than I am, when he graduated from high school the year before, and he went to summer school all summer. That mm-hmm. summer time he went to do that twice. Why, he was well on his way to get that degree. Okay, now I'm talking about in 43.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now then, no, see, it must have been in March. Anyhow, Congress changed. Start of 43, the youngest that the Army could draft anybody was 19 years old.
Okay, yeah.
That was the lowest lowest they could go to get a soldier was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right in the first of 43, they threw that out the window. They just threw that out the window.
Yeah.
They were going to draft 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff I grew up involved with just all went out the window.
So you were drafted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you drafted while you were at Purdue?
No. First, my birthday was in May, and that's the semester I was in, ended the 1st of May.
Okay.
So I was back home. Actually back home to be the finish up my high school,
mm-hmm.
and the last half of my high school. And so that I was 18 in May the 13th.
And you got drafted?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in what branch?
Well, all the guys that was in my class, now we, they're at Cambridge schools, they would start suits at the middle of the year instead of in September. They'd start them in the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now those guys are always a half year ahead of everybody else, but they never let them graduate until the guys behind them graduated.
Oh, okay.
Counted in the class that started on September that year instead of in January.
Mm-hmm.
So we had several guys about my age. They moved them guys up a year ahead of time, mm-hmm. so they could graduate before they became 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we had about five boys that came in my class, that 43 class, just so they could have a degree from high school before they got drafted.
Wow. And what?
I was living through that kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah. And how did you feel when you knew that you were going to get drafted? Or like when you kind of were starting to think that would happen to you?
Well, everybody's kind of apprehensive about everything. With most of the guys in my, about six of us, six boys that graduated there that year I did. And about all of them, except me that I know of, went to the Navy.
Okay.
They just enlisted in the Navy. If you get enlisted in, well, you had a half a dozen things you could enlist into. You could enlist in the Navy, the Marines, several different things, mm-hmm. you could enlist into. But the Navy was where most of them just went into the Navy.
And is that what you did?
I didn't want to go into the Navy.
Okay,
I didn't know how to swim. I didn't want to get in the Navy. And so anyhow, and my brother's already in the Army.
Okay.
Yeah, he's on, but this time time I graduated from high school, he was over in the Philippines fighting.
Oh, wow.
He got him back quick in that process up there, mm-hmm. At Purdue.
Yeah.
They just zapped him out of there and put him, he lost his, he was already 19, and so he just went right straight into the Army.
Yeah. And what was your role in the Army? What did you do?
That was kind of a strange thing. When I enlisted, I had to go out to Indianapolis to enlist, and I went out there and enlisted, and I just went into the, in fact, that was the only place around there in that county that had a place to enlist into the Air Force, and so I went to Indianapolis to do that. I just thought I was enlisting into the Air Corps, and then after I got involved in the thing, got in the Army and started getting training and stuff, I finally realized what I'd done, mm-hmm. and that was something that's a little different that had never been done before. And that was that the Navy and the Air Force, and I guess most of the Army too, maybe, I don't know. But anyhow, in the Air Corps, what they do, they had what they call a cadet.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of them or
no.
Not. Okay. Well, when I was up at Purdue, that half year I was up at Purdue, the boys' dormitories up there, there's four sections of it, and I was in the south section, and in the north section, and on the east section were Navy cadets.
Mm-hmm.
They just called them Navy cadets, and I didn't know what they were. I guess what the definition of a cadet is, they're training to be an officer.
Okay.
So that's what I found out I was in the Air Force. And so as soon as I went through basic training for my physical, mm-hmm. stuff, they took me out straight up to a college. In that college up in Albany, Michigan, and it was there about 3 months, I guess, is in that place in college. And then after you went through that, well, then at the end of that time was there in that college, they had a little airfield over there, and we put parachutes on, and they put us in a proper cubby, and a pilot take us up and try to check us out whether we could fly or not.
Oh, wow.
And so they did that there at that college. Now then, after you got that done, then they sent us down to Texas. They call that pre-flight. Well, I knew it in the Air Force, they had a deal where they could train a pilot,
mm-hmm.
and make a pilot out of the guys. And they had a thing down in Texas that was called a pre-flight. That's what they did down there. They just take them down there, try them out, see whether they can make a pilot out of them. Mm-hmm. Instead of being into anything like that, which I didn't pass that test on that flying that airplane, I knew it wasn't going to be a pilot.
Yeah.
And so, okay, what am I going to be? Now, that thing, the provost cadets, the cadet thing, this was all new to the Army, to that cadet thing. They had a pilot, they had a co-pilot, and they had a bombardier, and they had a navigator.
Mm-hmm.
They had four things that are in this cadet program.
Mm-hmm.
They're all people, they're on bombers. I thought at that time, all I knew about a bomber was that the pilot and the co-pilot got the airplane there. When he got ready to drop the bombs, the bombardier dropped the bombs.
Uh-huh.
And he just sat down there and just dropped the bombs. Okay, that was about, I said, why the hell is he going to make an officer out of him? Before things was over with, I found out that those airplanes flew over there to Germany. And when they got ready to bomb, they made a pilot out of that bombardier. And he took that airplane away from the other guys and he flew that darn thing down there while they're bombing.
My goodness.
See how things change around just
overnight.
Yeah, that's why he was included with it. I never did know whether they included a navigator.
And what did you do?
Well, I was a navigator.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a navigator.
And did you enjoy that?
Well, like I say, I went through that, what they call pre-flight, and I said it was a misnomer. It wasn't a pre-flight at all, like they thought about it. Guys learned to fly an airplane. All it was a schooling to train me to be an officer. Now this cadet program, these guys are telling you about, you're going to make cadets out of you. If you completed any one of those things that you completed, you're an automatically a lieutenant in the Army.
Oh, wow.
You're just automatically. So now then, they're not teaching you to learn something, they're teaching you to be an officer.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time.
Wow, that's pretty cool, actually. So where all did you go while you were in the service? Like what cities, states, countries?
Well, I was down in Texas in San Antonio.
Oh, okay. San Antonio?
Yeah, San Antonio. Yeah, that's I knew where they had a pre-flight for the pilots, but that's why they called ours a pre-flight instead of what it really was. They just called it a pre-flight for a navigator.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that training was. After I went through that program there for that thing, then the bunch I was with, they took us down to the lower part of Texas. Clear down, we were down close to Browntown down there,
mm-hmm.
bottom side of Texas. And they had a place down there that they taught us gunnery, or at least the group I was with, they taught us to gunnery. Now, on that thing, they had a track around there, and they had a truck that you get in the back end of it, and had a thing up there with a tripod on it, like the bombers do in those planes. And then we went around a circle, and they sent skeets out at us, and we tried to hit those skeets with that thing. And so we went through that thing, and mm-hmm. then they had all kinds of other stuff. Well, we learned to fire all kinds of the small arms stuff, mm-hmm. that we learned how to fire all of them. And then before they was done, they put us in an airplane and do some flying,
mm-hmm.
to see how you can do. They'd have a plane fly along with a bomber that has socks behind it. You shoot out, and I was little, so I got shoved in the back part of a B-24. Now the B-24s had a compartment on the back of them with a turret in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a guy sat in there with machine guns on that thing, and you had to crawl in that thing through a little opening. If you get that turn in the right direction, you get into it, and get in there, and then shut it off, and then you just cut off from the rest of the airplane. But anyhow, that's where I went training there, shooting at the target with that machine guns back there and that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after doing that, they gave us a big lesson on how to take care of ourselves. If we're a soldier, it's all these people in an airplane sometimes end up down on the ground with the enemies around them.
Yeah.
And maybe they bailed out. They bailed out to land in enemy territory. So anyhow, they gave us a big lesson on how to take care of yourself if you meet a soldier on the ground. And that was a shocker, because this is after we had started fighting Japan, mm-hmm. down there at that island down there.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that was where American soldiers, they the only reason started that thing there was just, they just wanting to get some Army guys, I mean some guys in the regular Army, toughened up a little bit to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And in Japan, because it was at war with Japan at this time.
Yeah.
And so they start fighting in there. When they got fighting those Japs in there, and that thing, they found out some of those Japs were a little different soldier than anything we'd ever been involved with before.
Mm-hmm.
And this instructor on our telling how to take care of yourself, he says, I want to tell you one thing and you forget everything else I told you about what you can do, this or that or the other thing to get the best of us, of another soldier. But he says, I want to tell you one thing and don't you ever forget it as long as you live. And that is that if you and a Japanese soldier come face to face on the ground, you have to know one thing, never go any farther. And that is either you or him are going to be laying on the ground dead with that kind of soldier. Mm-hmm. Japanese war, they never run into that European stuff.
Yeah.
It's all new stuff that we had to learn.
Oh, man. That's terrifying.
In the Army.
Yeah.
You said you just know one thing, that you or him are going to be laying on the ground dead.
Mm-hmm.
You're done, before you're done.
That's crazy.
I'm only 18 years old. I'm a young guy, away from home, and I'm sitting here talking about getting in an airplane, and that airplane 300 miles an hour going from here to yonder.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to scratch around here about all kinds of information, how much gas you're going to take and how much you got left and where's the wind coming from and just all kinds of stuff. Just your head to jump pump full of that stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah.
On that navigation school, and it just got clear away from me. And then before it got done with that, at the end of that thing, they took you up in an airplane, and they flew from a little place down there close in Texas, and they flew you down to the southern part and back up again, and you were supposed to tell the pilot and the co-pilot in there how much gas you had. If you're going to be running out of gas, to tell them that you're going to be running out of gas. You're supposed to keep track of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You had to know how much wind you're going against and just all kinds of things affected that. And
mm-hmm.
So, but then when I got done that in that airplane flying, it was a little two-engine plane. There were three of us sitting in there in that plane testing us, and we hadn't even more got off the ground until lightning thunderstorm.
Oh no!
Hit me, and that just when that hit me, that navigation went out the window.
Yeah. Trying to get out of
there. Yeah, I was just wondering how long you're going to go before you died.
So how did you figure out?
Yeah,
you just got out of there.
So anyhow, I knew that as slow as I figured, that there's no way that I was ever going to be able to keep up with that 300 mile an hour bomber and to tell where,
yeah,
where or how long it was going to be out or where it was going.
Uh-huh.
And so I just knew route, all that stuff off. And it just lucked out that when I got through this thing, I just sat there and didn't do anything. I was through this, just scared death out of doing anything. And that time they had us in that thing. So when I got back, they said, well, you didn't pass. Now then, whatever, don't mean any, which one of those pilot or when any of those schools that you went to that you didn't pass it, well, they say you washed out. You just washed out. That was the way they're wording it. They didn't say it functioned. They just said you washed out. You're no longer in that program anymore.
So then what did you do?
Well, okay, when you do that, I'm no longer a cadet.
Yeah.
So now I'm just Buckeye's sole person in the Air Force. They let you sit around there for about a month after they tell you that, and then they did give me a reason why they were flunking me, not passing me.
And why?
And they said they put down a fear of flying.
Fear of flying?
Yeah.
Oh.
Fear of flying.
That's not a good thing.
Which I really was.
Yeah.
I was scared to death when I was up here in that airplane. But anyhow. That just took me away from the airplane deal. So we sat around there for about a month to get over that losing out on that other job when you thought maybe you might end up being an officer. And then they sent us up to the northern part of Texas. And up there in the northern part of Texas, they had a school up there that trained Air Force people how to things that you needed. And if you're in a combat situation, things to keep an airplane flying.
Oh, okay.
Keep it flying.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what that school was for. They had to tell you all the hydraulic stuff and everything that's in the airplane or anything else with it that had need to know. So anyhow, went through that program doing that, and I passed it, and then I thought it was about done. Lo and behold, I get notice from the people that I'm on a bunch of people that were leaving that training down there in Texas, aircraft training down there in Texas, and going up to Seattle, Washington.
Huh.
And Boeing Company up there in Seattle had made, this airplane. The Army had specified a kind of an airplane they wanted, and they just took the brains up there and mm-hmm. made an airplane like they wanted.
Oh, wow.
Without any experimenting with it or anything. And then I've seen some figures since the war that it cost the government about as much to develop and build that airplane as they need to get the bomb. It was that kind of a deal. This airplane was entirely different than anything that had ever been flown.
So you said it was a...
Guys went punching their brains, no experience whatsoever.
Oh my gosh.
All right, now, what goes behind all that stuff is that on the bombers, on the B-24 and 17, which is the 2 4-engine bombers we had, anything on either one of those airplanes that moved had a hydraulic motor that moved it.
Okay.
Landing flaps or just anything on that plane that moved, it was done with a hydraulic cylinder. Now this new airplane doesn't have a hydraulic thing on it. It's completely electric. Everything on this airplane is moved by a motor, electric motor.
Mm-hmm.
So now you see why the trainer on how to take care of an airplane.
And then it's a different...
It's no good because this new airplane, and that's why Boeing had this school up there, that they actually had a place for us to live up there, and right there on their grounds, and then they had an instructor, female instructors, who would take us in every day to teaching us how this airplane was different than any of the other airplanes.
Wow.
Well, that's why it forced them into having a whole different training program for people to service an airplane.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, okay, on my trip from Texas to go up there to that thing.
In Washington? Seattle, right?
Hadn't got one state out of Texas until Hitler was ended. That war was ended.
Oh, so you were on the way there and then it ended?
I thought, oh boy, I'll get to go home.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, I went up there went through that school up there.
Yeah.
I thought, well, about that same time, they finally got the bomb. That stopped the war.
Wow. So how old would you have been then?
I was 18.
You're still 18?
Yeah, I'm still 18.
19?
Yeah.
Okay.
They wasn't going to waste all that time they'd spent with me. And so they said, hey, we're going to transfer you down to Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
When we got out of that school up there and wondered why they was doing that, well, I found out that Denver was where they was training these new B-23s, they called it,
mm-hmm.
bombers. That's where they was training them how to fly, was down there in the airfield in
Denver.
And so that's why they wanted us to go down there to work on those B-23 airplanes down there in Denver. Now, when they got down there, thing on the aircraft, regardless of what the aircraft used it for, all the rules on an aircraft, if there are certain things on every airplane built, that every 10 years of flying times has to be checked. So those guys, training pilots, they're flying those airplanes all the time. They just hour after hour get on those airplanes. So they just put bunch of hangars out there. They run that B-23 down in one of those hangars and start down through that whole thing. Time to get over through there is going to a different place. And I got jobs in the electric division down there. So they used us to be trained so we could operate on those big new airplanes. And then I found afterwards that the only reason they ever had that airplane designed and built was
mm-hmm.
because that bomb, after they got that bomb so it was done.
Yeah.
It was so big that our other airplanes, 17s and 24s, couldn't carry it.
Oh my gosh.
So now they had to build a new airplane to carry that bomb. And this is what it was.
Yeah.
So now if they're going to use that bomb, they got to have a lot of people around to know how to keep those airplanes flying.
Oh yeah.
That's why I couldn't ever go home when I thought I would.
So when did you finally go home?
Well, okay, when I got things pretty well got settled down with the bomb and stuff, boy, the officers down there said, hey, there's a bunch of us. I don't know how many of us there was. I didn't have the bunch I was with. They said, you guys have been floating around here for a good while without doing much for this war. Since we feel like it, what we should do with you is send you overseas and let the guys overseas get home.
Really?
Yeah. So now they transferred me out of being there at Denver working on those things to send me overseas to let the guys come home. And it happened that Las Vegas was the Air Force's overseas depot. Anybody going overseas from the Air Force had to go through Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to transfer out of Denver down to Las Vegas. And I got down to Las Vegas. I've been there about a week. And lo and behold, the president had made a new declaration that anybody been in the service for 2 years wasn't going to send overseas.
Oh.
And I knew it was
crazy.
Sent
you all over the place.
I'd already, on my other stuff I'd been into as a soldier, I'd seen these guys that have been gunners and stuff over there on those 17. They was already home way back then. They was already home. They sent them home right away.
Yeah.
So they didn't need to send me overseas to get them home.
No. Oh, my gosh. So then you finally went home then?
No.
No.
No. They kept me down there in Las Vegas. Wow. Well, in fact, I was down there in Las Vegas New Year's Eve of 43.
Okay.
I was in the city.
Was that fun? Did you like Vegas?
Yeah, sure. Everyone was fun on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So I'm there not doing anything. I'm just sitting there. Well, I had a little experience out of that deal. We just sit around playing cards about all day long. And then so when the guys got ready to go into town for New Year's Eve, they knew I didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, hey, if we give you our money when we go into Las Vegas, will you take us into town and look after us while we're in town? And I think about four of them did that with me. And
yeah.
So I took them into town, and then about 3 o'clock in the morning, I finally got them all put together. And anything down there in town with them, they wanted more money to buy drinks or gamble or anything. Well, they had to come and get it off of me. They couldn't just go do it.
So you were the supervisor, basically,
yeah,
babysitter.
I was taking care of them for that. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I finally got them all in the taxi and got us back out on the post again. Okay, now that's how New Year's Eve went in Las Vegas for me. And then after Las Vegas, they come around and they want to know if you want to sign up to do on a work thing.
Oh, okay.
And so, well, you're tired of sitting around there doing nothing, so, well, yeah, I'll sign up. So they put us on a little school bus and took us out of town. We ended up going over, I didn't know there was any mountains around in Las Vegas, but there was. We went outside the edge of town down there.
Uh-huh.
And started up in the side of a mountain, got up there. In that mountain, they had a little place there were, well, just people all just get together, I think.
Yeah.
But there's a little government housing thing up there where guys could sleep in. And when we got up there, they found out what this was. They were taking soldiers that volunteered to do this back over into the mountains back then behind there. And they're cutting telephone poles out of the trees back through there and carrying them out of there to where they can ship them. Those guys did that. Boy, they come back here and beat cookies. Big guys, and I was little, they didn't even put me on it. They kept me in the kitchen, working in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They're at the building. And I had split wood and stuff for the furnace thing. But those guys come back, they're just a bunch of beat cookies every night. They really wore out carrying those darn things over those mountains back there to sell them.
Yeah.
Get them where they could
and
ship
you were in the kitchen?
Get them where they could ship them. Okay. Now that was the only reason I bring this up. On Christmas morning, when we was out there and the snow came in there, earlier went to bed, there was a carload of kids come up there and just playing around.
Yeah.
And the road got so bad they couldn't go any farther. So they come in and got this room, this restroom room here. Well, just like a place where you just cabin, I mean, stove and stuff in it, and just rest up. They went in there and got rested up and took off and went back home. But anyhow, and then Christmas morning, I got out of my... I slept in that other building over there where those other guys slept. And I got out there in the street, and boy, those trees out there had been covered with snow. And that was one of the most beautiful sights I think I'd seen from, I don't know how, Yeah. How long? Just beautiful. And so that only lasted a week up there, and then I went back home. And then when I got back down to Las Vegas, why, now then what I was going to do, well, I didn't know if anything was going to do, but they decided to take me and some other guys and send us down to Selma, Alabama.
You were all over the place.
Yeah, and so they get us on a train and take us down to Selma, Alabama, and we get down there, and well, what are they doing down here that they need Air Force guys for? And we found out, on the way down there, we finally found out they were training French pilots down there in that little Alabama airfield.
Really?
French pilots. They trained them down there.
Why in Alabama?
Yeah.
It's far away? Wow.
Okay. Well, about a week after we hit that place, I never did get down to the airplanes. Well, that thing's canceled. We're not doing that anymore. We're not training them anymore. I just all quit.
So you were just in Alabama.
Yeah, here and then I have Alabama left to do.
Then what did you do?
Well, just kill time.
So you just hung out in Alabama for a while?
Yeah. And being another guy did decide to, we didn't do anything, I guess. I could get passes. Now, they give you passes to get out for any time you didn't have a job to do it there.
Mm-hmm.
And really the only job you ever had in any of those places like that was in the dining rooms, have to go and get dining rooms ready for everybody else. But anyhow, they give you time off from that way. You didn't have anything to do, but you could get a pass. And by golly, I got a pass. And those passes are only supposed to be good for only about 30 miles. I'm a long way from, more than 30 miles away from Cambridge, Indiana. So I had time off. I got to check it with the train that went up to Cincinnati from down there, and I could get up to Cincinnati on a train and forever. Didn't have any workload to do down there. It wasn't on the list. They put those lists out ahead of time. Just had your duties for working down there in the dining room. So I thought, well, I got enough time to go to Cambridge City.
So you did.
So I got on a train and went up to Cincinnati and saw my wife. She lived out of Fairborn, right outside of Dayton.
You were already married?
Huh?
You were already married, or no?
Well,
you were dating?
Every time I went from Seattle to Denver, before that, when I went from the top of Texas down to the bottom of Texas, finished that thing down there and transferred me up to this navigation school, I had a 10 days to get from that southern tip of Texas up to San Antonio, 10 days to get there.
Okay.
So that gives me enough time to go to Indiana and back.
Uh-huh.
So I did. That was the first time. Now this is in July of 43. I'm on my trip up to Indiana, and this girl that I ended up marrying, she come to Cambridge. Her family moved to Cambridge City when I was in the fifth greatest grade school. That was the first time she shows up in one of my classes. So that summer, that family, there was two of them, there was two girls, the dad and mom and two girls, and I moved to Cambridge City.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started at school, or in my fifth grade, she started at Cambridge City Schools. Okay, we went through the grade school, and then Cambridge, we had five grades in a school building down there.
Mm-hmm.
On a junior high, we didn't go to school down there in downtown. They took us over to high school.
Okay.
And that was junior high.
So it was combined.
Mixed in with the high school at their school building over there. So then we went through 7th and 8th grade over there, and in the same building we went through high school with.
Yeah. So you had known her for a long time, but when did you two actually get together?
Well, all the time we was in those classes together and stuff. I had a couple of girlfriends down there that started with me in the first grade, and
mm-hmm.
they'd have parties and stuff, and
yeah,
and then they'd invite this girl into the all different things, so she got acquainted with the rest. West of her, and me too. But anyhow, now we went through two grades of junior high, and then went through the 4 years of high school. Only it wasn't 4 years, it was only 3 years, because between her junior year and her senior year, her whole family moved over to Ohio.
Really?
Yeah, her dad was a lumberyard there at Cambridge, is what he came from short. And they were over there, and this place over there in Ohio they were at was two little towns, and two towns are in the same county. They're just side by side in there. And this is right at the edge of that new airfield that they built over there.
Yeah.
Right, Patterson Air Field Base.
Okay.
It's just right at the edge of that thing. And so there's building like crazy in there for housing for those people coming in there at that airfield and stuff. That's why her dad got moved over there to run the lumber yard over there.
And you two were together during that time.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So anyhow, when they moved her over there for her senior year and took her away from Cambridge stuff.
Mm-hmm. So then how did you get back together?
Well, okay. When I got back from Purdue in January, and then by the end of January, the seniors at the end of May, the seniors always had a prom, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And the junior class was supposed to get it ready, take care of it. And so we had that thing that year. And so I asked her, just asked this girl if she would come over and do that prom with me. Well, of course, there's all her classmates that was over there. So sure she did. Sure she'd do that. So she did. She came over and went with me to that prom end of the year. After that one, that was about a good while before I really ever got back over there to Ohio to be with her.
Mm-hmm.
And
so then you two were dating when you were in the service.
Well, no.
No.
Just as I graduated in last of May, the gal that worked at the draft board there where I was in told me, she says, well, you're 18 now and you're ready for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And your name is pretty short on the list of people. And she says, I think if you want to do something to not get drafted, you better be doing it pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I had to go. That's why I had to go to Indianapolis to get enlisted into the Air Force just right away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after doing that, they said, we'll get back with you when we're ready mm-hmm. for you. And it must have been 3 months. And I found out what was going on was if you were going to be into some officer training, you had to get a clearance from the intelligence people, the service people.
So, okay.
Yeah, they had to have a clearance before they could train you to be an officer without that clearance. So that's what that about 2 months there that they just drug around to getting me clearance.
Yeah.
Clearance.
Oh, okay.
Through those guys.
Yeah.
Now then, okay.
Real quick, what was your wife's name?
Joanne. Hines.
Okay. And what was your first date with her? Was that the prom? Was the first date the prom?
No. What? In high school, we had what they called a girl reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boys had try high. What they call try high.
Okay.
That was the boys' clubs. Now, these different clubs, sometimes the boys that have a dance and a party, they could invite the girls they wanted to, and then the girls had a time when they'd get together and they could invite the boys they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was trade back and forth there all the time through high school. Those kind of different things.
Mm-hmm. So then, what year did you finally return to Cambridge for good?
Okay, that was an interesting thing. When I was down there in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
they put out a list of there's so many guys, let's go this week, they're going to get shipped out to go. And then that's the way they did it. They just mm-hmm. picked so many guys. Each week they'd have the guys lined up to be shipped out to get out of the service.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guys always before me, their team came up, they just went, they were done.
Yeah.
And so by the time my list was supposed to get that, lo and behold, they didn't send us.
Really?
I just left us sitting there.
For how long?
Well, for about 3 weeks. A friend of mine was the chauffeur for the pilot that was the head of that Air Force down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the chauffeur. So he told him one time, he said, some of the guys are getting a little bit upset about getting their sent home.
Yeah.
And he said, questioned him, found out. And so he called over to Montgomery. That's the one that handled that over at Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
And he called over there and wondered what was going on. And guess what?
What?
Those guys before us was a short list. So they just telegraphed them over from there over to the Montgomery. And they had ours was such a long list, they didn't want to do that. They wanted to send them a letter. So the letter got lost somewhere.
Oh, so you all could have been done, but you had to wait for the letter.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So when did you finally leave then?
So
after three weeks?
Well, those visits I made up here with Joanne.
Yeah.
That summer, and two of those other times. Each one of those times I trenched had 10 days. I think four of them. There's four times that you got all together. Mm-hmm. That I got to see her while I'm in the service for a few days.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, we got together on those things and finally worked out that we probably wanted to get married.
Uh-huh.
And things, and so we just worked around. And then, so we set up a date when we got that first list of when we were supposed to have been out of there. Mm-hmm. So we just set a date for to get married, church thing to get married at.
Yeah.
So.
How did you know that you wanted to marry her?
Well, that's a good question, a real good question, because she was one of those people that like a lot of girls, are kind of giddy and yitty and so on. They get a boyfriend or something. She just didn't bother her at all. She just went that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe that's why I really got attracted to her.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I suppose I was in about the seventh or eighth grade. I had finally decided that, hey, she was going to be my Valentine for the rest of the time I'm in school.
Oh.
So I picked her out as to be my chosen one that I was really interested in. The rest of them weren't interested in.
Yeah. So how did you ask her to marry you?
Well, it was one of those trips when I came home on those 10 days free. I was over at her hometown, and we got a bag of popcorn and sitting out there looking at the city. Nice view out there, just out in the country by ourselves. We just like to talk and stuff, and we're sitting out there. And when I was about 12 years old, riding my bicycle around all the time, I looked down on the ground, and the place there in the gravel on the road was a diamond ring.
Really?
Yeah, laying there in the ground.
And, oh my goodness!
And so I picked that thing up, and a jewelry store right around the corner, and I knew it had a robbery. And so I looked at that thing, and I went into the jewelry store, and I said, "Could this be one of your rings? That was stolen or something?" And she looked at it, and it had marks all over where it had been run over with the car and stuff.
Yeah.
She looked at that, and she said, "No, that wasn't one of ours." And I knew why she said that, because she didn't want that ring back.
Yeah.
So you got it. So then she just said, "No, one was stolen, so you just keep it for whatever you want to do with it." I said, "Well, what should I do?" And she says, "Well, just run an ad in the paper asking if somebody lost their ring." And then anybody comes around and asks you with that, then you can get with them about what you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, I'm only a little kid now about 12 years old. And that never happened. Nobody ever, what you do, they wouldn't if they stole the darn thing. They just stole it and lost it out there is what they did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So anyhow, I kept that ring and I had folks just put it in a lockbox.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got ready to ask this girl if she'd marry me, I didn't say anything to her. Opened that bag of popcorn, stuck that ring down inside that bag of popcorn.
Oh.
And she got a surprise.
Was she super excited?
No, she didn't know what to do.
Oh, but she said yes.
That's the way I asked her. I didn't ask her dad or anything else. That's just the way I asked her.
Uh-huh. So when did you get married?
I got out of the Army on the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And our wedding was the 23rd.
Oh, wow. 23rd of what month?
June.
June? Okay.
43.
Okay. Wow. So you didn't waste any time.
I sure did. I was sweating. Done a lot of sweating that month.
Yeah, I bet.
Wait. And then besides that, my uncle, the farmer, he wanted to know. He knew I went to Purdue that semester. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to know for me in the Army. In fact, he and Dad came down to Texas and asked me, he says, are you wanting to be a tenant for me on my farm? He had people kept a year round.
Yeah.
He said, do you want to do that, or are you sure you want to do it? And I said, well, yeah, I'm sure. Because I had decided from that semester at Purdue that I was never going to be a Purdue graduate.
Really?
I never was going to go to college, be a big college graduate.
Mm-hmm. So you went and worked on the farm.
So now he'd asked me the farmers could get an exemption for people who would help them on a farm. Anybody who was on a farm, tied up on a farm, had to hand to raise grain and stuff, they could get it. I had two friends that were both of them were farmers that didn't get drafted because they had to spend their time with on the farms, great, and so they got exempted. So mm-hmm. I knew that existed, and someone was doing it, was using that, and so I thought, well, my uncle asked me if I wanted to do that, be a hand for him, and ask for an exemption, and I says, I've got a brother that's over in the Philippines as a soldier. I says, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
Exempt myself out that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I just told him no, I wouldn't do that. So I turned him down on that deal.
So then once you were out of the service,
yeah.
You said yes. Yeah.
So now that after service, okay, some of the guys that get in time. I had one friend in my class that worked for a country. They're making some government stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they could get exempted. He never got in the service at all. He just spent the war working in his job.
Oh, wow.
And so all kinds of funny things went on.
Oh, yeah.
In those days.
I'm sure.
And so, anyhow, here I am getting ready to get out, and I don't have any contact like that with anybody to do anything. And the only thing I've got to look forward to work at when I get out of the service, you wouldn't go to getting any factory job where you'd worked before. They'd take them back a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't do that. So I just kind of left this farm. It was about the only place I had a chance that I even knew of where I could have a job when I got out.
Yeah.
So I just had to tell him, yeah, I'd do that.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you work there?
Well, it wasn't anything I said. I just said that I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it got a little closer to the time, we kind of worked down to a deal of 3 years.
Okay.
When I worked too for him for 3 years. Now, he had a house there, a little house, wasn't much of a house. It was a place where he could live, and me and my mm-hmm. wife could live.
Yeah.
Because most of the people he had working for him like that had families, that mm-hmm. every man or woman families. And so I thought, well, if I want to get married, I've got a house that I can live in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just what I had to go for.
So you worked there for 3 years?
Yeah, so I signed up to work for him for 3 years.
And then what did you do after that for a job?
Then we got married, and then right after I was married had a wedding on Friday. Well, that was a kind of a story there too, that my neighbor, you couldn't get a, back in those days, you couldn't go anywhere and get a hotel room.
Really?
Oh no, you couldn't get in anywhere, hotel room. And so this neighbor that worked here over at Richmond in a hardware store where a traveling salesman was through there all the time. He got talking to one of them, and he was a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got a deal. He found out this salesman had a room over in the hotel there in Richmond, had to have a hotel room all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He just kept one there all the time. And so now, here, this wedding's on Friday, and so this guy asked him, is there any chance somebody could use that room for a weekend?
Really?
And by golly, he got worked out so he could.
Oh, wow.
that I could have his room as long as he got out of there by Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh. So for your honeymoon, that's where you went?
So now I had a hotel room. Only it's down in Cincinnati. That's about 75 miles away. Okay. a little hitch to that thing. I had to be down there and register in at that hotel before 11 o'clock on Friday night. Now, church wedding at 7 o'clock.
Oh, no.
75 miles away from Cincinnati. So, what were you talking about? Somebody having a quick ready thing.
Yeah.
We had things hooked out, but my car that was going to go to Cincinnati was parked off of Main Street and just around the corner. And then this guy run the drugstore across the street, the store across the street, I had to deal with him. That he'd bring a car as soon as the wedding was over. He'd bring that car down to church.
And take you there?
So the wife and I could get in that car right away and get out of Cambridge. And it just so happened as he came around the corner, here we're standing out here in the street ready to walk up that way. He just drives up, stuffs that engine, jumps out of that thing, and we jump into it, and we took off for Cincinnati just like that.
Oh, my goodness. Did he make it on time?
I guess we did.
Oh, nice.
At least I never heard it. I never checked whether it was or we got in, and that's all I know.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
So we did have a place to have a honeymoon there for Saturday.
Yeah.
And Sunday.
Wow. And how many years were you and your wife married?
How many years?
Yeah.
58. Yeah, I was hoping we'd hit 60, but it was just 58 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously that was a very long time. What would you say was the key to that long, successful marriage?
If I had to come up with a realistic answer to that, would be that she from when I first knew her was a solid Christian girl.
Mm-hmm.
She was a solid Christian girl. I was raised in a Sunday school church,
mm-hmm.
So that was one thing I was interested in, getting somebody that had a good relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that girl did everything I ever knew about that girl. That I don't know of a single person who could be classified any better as a Christian than that girl was. She's that kind of a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we started our marriage.
Putting God at the center.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Anyhow, after work for this uncle, I was warned by two. Well, one of the guys, my cousin, was had worked for him. Two of them had worked for this guy as kids. And they said he's an awful hard guy to work for. Awful hard guy to work for.
Really?
They warned me not to get tied up to him, really. They just give me extra warning not to do it. It was court. I just had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we'll wait and see. So I worked for him for 3 years. And then I decided, hey, I'm not going to do this the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And he was the kind. That guy, when he was 12 years old, his dad died.
Oh, no.
His dad died when he was 12 years old. And his mother got somebody to farm their farm for him. And the next year, he said, I think I could farm this farm for you. And he did. He,
oh, my gosh.
He took over and farmed her farm for
that's amazing.
For his mother. So he started young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very successful.
Yeah, seriously.
He learned how to do things the hard way. Work.
Mm-hmm.
You work. You didn't get a piece of machinery to do anything. You just did it yourself. Work.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it was. Well, he asked that people work for him, too. They uh-huh. weren't that way.
So then, after that, farming with him, what did you do for a job afterwards, once you told him you didn't want to come back?
What did I do after I got that?
Yeah.
Well, I quit the herd, and then it was in a time when this government, if you was going to college, they just pay your way to go to college. And then since these farm boys weren't going to college, well, they started a program that they were going to train these young guys to be farmers. And so they get somebody that was a teacher of agriculture and stuff. And then they paid us then to go together to form a class with an instructor. And that was our way of getting the same thing. What was that, $50 a month, I think, they'd pay us to go to those schools. I had to drive up to Greensport to get there. And at night, that's how they got that there. So we had that thing going while we were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then those guys came down when I was starting farming myself, he'd help me do all the stuff on the farm and things. So the government kind of helped us get.
He got his own farm.
He got his own farm. Yeah.
We was getting, I think, $50 a month on that deal.
Oh,
we
wow.
could get so enough to keep and buy some groceries.
Oh yeah.
And still us.
So you did that for the rest of your life? You farmed?
Well, I did that for about 2 or 3 years. I really thought I'd go to that Patterson Field at Dayton, the big airfield over there, and I get a job as an airplane mechanic, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
On that thing. And boy, I found out I was too late. The other guys that got out there earlier than I did
took over.
They had those jobs already going. There weren't any jobs around there to get in.
Yeah.
So I just cut me clear out of that job.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, I finally had an uncle that was kind of into state politics, and he found out that down in Southern Indiana, down Madison's, they had a insane hospital down there.
Okay.
And they had farmed. I knew they had that hospital there at Richmond like that. They had
yeah.
farmed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that he found out from the state office the person they had down there to raise their hogs on their farm down there had quit, and they needed a new guy to manage their whole farm down there
mm-hmm.
at that state hospital in okay. North Madison.
Were you there 2 years, Deb, in
yeah,
Madison?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I stayed there for 2 years working. Yeah. That thing. By this time, I have two children. Have
okay.
Two children.
Yeah. So we're bouncing around a lot, but so you worked on the. In the hog farm for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then you went back to Cambridge.
Yeah.
And then what did you do when you went back to Cambridge that?
Well, I took my furniture. I lived in the house down there, so I had furniture.
Uh-huh.
And I took it back up to Cambridge while I lived there. And then my wife's aunt had a home there.
Okay.
In a little town next to Cambridge, say Germantown.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in a big house that had a lot of room in it, and she went just by herself. So she fixed it up so we could have at least two rooms to live. And we just moved in there with her, all our stuff, and moved in there with her.
Oh, wow.
And her house there in Germantown.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm within 2 miles of Cambridge City over there, this little town where she's at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took care of the furniture, got that all stacked there at her place. While all this was going on from down there to Madison, North Madison, boy, my mom went, well, like I told you, her dad died before I was born.
Yeah.
So he died back at that time. Now then, when he died, the family had these 3 boys and 2 girls, and they all decided to just split everything up, each one of them take what they could get out of it. She didn't want to keep it. In fact, she said she just going to quit being a mother, any kind. So they did. They dispersed all of everything he had.
Yeah. So what you were going to tell was that Grandma Mary saved the inheritance money and bought a farm for you and Mom to live on, right?
Mom inherited 90 acres of farm ground.
And gave it to you and your.
And then she had this, and then she just hired some people to farm it.
Okay.
Rent it out to farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, this whole thing worked around it. When I left that place down there, Madison Institution down there, I had 90 acres of farm ground I could farm, but there wasn't any building on it except an old log house, and I mean a log house that was on that 90 acres.
Oh, wow.
So now that I have a question, is there any way I can build a building on that farm so I can start farming it? That wasn't going to be easy to do, and so my dad and this neighbor, they were going into the bank, and they were talking about something. I don't know what they're talking about, but anyhow, well, before they got in the bank, well, something came up about farms, and he, I think what he did, that he told Dad that he'd bought this farm and thought he'd making some money off of it, and he said wasn't making the kind of money off of it that he thought what he had invested in it was paid him to do it, so he was wanting to get rid of it. And so Dad jumped right there and says, I'm looking for a farm. It's got some buildings on it, a house and some buildings on it.
Yeah.
So by golly,
they took
Mom's money from his 90 acres, they sold it, and bought this guy's farm.
Oh, okay.
He's got a guy that's been renting his farm for a few years, but he works in a factory over at Newcastle.
Uh-huh.
And so he wasn't dependent on that.
Okay.
And so he was ready to get off of the farming business. He wasn't making much money if yet.
Yeah.
So now that if he gets out of that house, I'll have a house to live in, and that'll be the first place since I've been buried that I can put my wife and the family in a house of my own.
And you did. So what was your like favorite part about farming?
Well, you're your own boss, you can do your own thing you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what career or job advice would you give to someone who's like 18 or like 20 right now?
Well, my wife had a good answer to that. She graduated over here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as she graduated, she went to the University of Cincinnati.
Okay.
And signed up down there to start a four-year college course as a chemical engineer.
Wow. Oh my.
This girl didn't have anything but A's in her high school record.
Oh, wow. So what advice would you give to a college student then?
My wife tells all the kids when they start to college that she was interested in it, and that was that you take something of that college, and when you get done, you can earn a living with it.
Mm-hmm.
That was all those girls and the boys and everybody was same advice. Mm-hmm. She wanted them to take something in that college, and when they graduated, they could support themselves.
Yeah.
With it.
Mm-hmm. You had six kids, I guess. What parenting advice would you give to parents nowadays?
Trying to tell them how to do things. Just what wife told all the kids, that when you go to college, when you get done, you ought to be able to have a degree in something you can make a living at. Whether it's girls or boys, either one, same advice.
Yeah, so like obey and have respect and
yeah,
those sort of things.
Well, they were all our seven kids were raised in church work. That told them that.
Yeah. And then how many grandkids do you have?
40.
40?
Well, just about.
Oh, big grandkids.
Yeah,
I've got 26 grandkids.
Right.
26 grandkids and then 14 great-grandkids?
Yeah. 42
great-grandkids, 26. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So these family reunions that you have are...
That shakes everybody's head a little bit when you tell them how many grandkids you got. They say, wow. Three of them drive me nuts.
So this picture right here. So you said that was like family reunions that you have?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and
just your kids and their kids. And their
there's
kids.
About 111,
I think. Oh my goodness.
With spouses.
Oh yeah. So what's your favorite part about having those get-togethers?
Well, I was going to tell you that my wife had all those things. She got operated on finally. I told one of the guys that said, will you do please put her in the hospital instead of send her home, put her up in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Went back the next morning, went in there and he called me in the room and he says, we opened your wife up and she's got cancer in her small intestine.
Oh.
Nothing you can do for it. No, mm-hmm. Nothing you can do for it. So
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So that we finally found out she did have irritable bowel syndrome.
She had
cancer in her intestines. Well, okay, she lived 1 year. Now, just like 10 days has been 1 year. She's operated on the 13th and died on the 3rd next year. So, okay, now that she knows she's out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to what are we going to do, she felt like that the thing had to do was get all this family together some way.
Mm-hmm.
And it got so big that nobody had a house in the family to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so she came up with the idea, well, hospitals could, nursing, I'll get it for hotels. Hotels could take care of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we got scrounging around and find some of those little cheaper hotels to mm-hmm. start with. And we did. We got things that we could get all of those kids rooms in it for all of those kids and their kids
mm-hmm.
in this little hotel. So we just put them up. We paid the hotel bill to get them together.
That's awesome.
She started that then.
She started it? Yeah.
Yeah, she started it.
Oh, wow. So how many years have you...
That's what I was trying to think. It was when he was diagnosed, they thought he had bone cancer.
Yeah, that's what we're going to get to.
Well,
so, yeah, you've had 5 different types of cancers?
Four.
Okay.
It said 5 on the list.
So 4 different types of cancer? You've had 4 different types of cancer?
I've had 4 cancers.
Yeah.
Wow. So you had 4 different types of cancer... And you've also had 2 strokes, right?
One major one. Yeah.
So when you're going through these hard times, these scary times, what was your mindset like?
It's just like it's always been, I guess, ever since I've been born. There'll be 8 different what comes along. You just got to live with it, get your way through it if you can. That was all those things. That one time when I had the cancer on my bladder down there, the lymphoma thing.
Mm-hmm.
This doctor got in there. He told me what kind of cancer it was, and he says that thing got about 3 different kinds of that cancer. It got about 3 different kinds. One of them is fast growing. One of them is slow growing, and it just all depends on what they are, as to what can be done with them.
Okay.
And now this thing, what particular place where this thing was at, was right up against my backbone. And I just kind of horseshoed around my artery down there, which means you wasn't going to have any surgery to get in there and work on that there. You wasn't going to have any radiation. There's no way in the world you could radiate
mm-hmm.
on that thing. So there's only one kind of thing that'll work on that. That's chemo.
Mm-hmm.
The girl said, well, Dad looks pretty healthy. He says, why don't you try to put him on chemo then? And he says, he's too old.
How old were you?
70.
You were older. He said you looked 10 years younger than what your age said, though. He's the one that recommended it.
Yeah.
How old were you when you were cancer-free?
In 05, you had your last surgery with your leg.
Yeah.
And then your sarcoma was the last one.
My wife died in that September. But before she died... She and I had been up to this doctor, and the thing had come up over my kneecap, and he says, I think we're going to have to do something to get rid of that thing.
How did you react when you heard that you were going to have to have your leg amputated?
Well, he said, I had two things going. I've had 15 years working with that thing, and in those 15 years, I've had 12 surgeries on that thing. I have to drive to Indianapolis and get knocked out. Cleaning this thing out so keep it so it's not hurting me. And so I'm ready to get rid of the darn thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that from that standpoint.
Yeah.
One time on
it's
one of
more miserable.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, in my lifetime, I've been with enough different doctors, with enough different things, that I don't get excited at all around here when these people say, well, the doctor says this or the doctor says that. I know what the doctor's going to say
yeah.
on that thing. About the fifth surgery went in there, he said, "Hey," he said, "I got a name for your cancer, myxoid fibrosarcoma." Sarcoma. Oh. He says, "That's your name."
That's your
name. All right, now, he's finally doing what I said right to start with. The only reason they don't have a name for it is because they never made one. He made it. That guy made the name for that one thing. My doctor made the name for that thing.
Oh, my goodness. That's terrible. I mean,
now, at this time frame, he was dealing with people over in England, and I think he went to England because they got people from all over the world coming in there. So he was dealing with them entirely all the time. He was dealing with me on this thing. And back at that time, there's about a dozen different people in the whole old world that had the same thing I have. I'm sure he and the British people over there just come up with this name for what it was. So now it's listed.
So you've experienced and seen so much over the last 97 years of your life. What do you think of the world right now?
The world right now?
Yeah, what do you think about it?
Well, I think that worldwide, and I know the United States-wise, that about in 1970, after this greatest generation that Cambridge ever had, got home and started living, when that war was over, we were a Christian nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By 1970, America is no longer a Christian nation. Is that the greatest generation we ever had? That changed America from a Christian nation to a non-Christian nation.
The 70s?
Huh?
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Generation.
I can use the wrong word. What he wrote might have been all right, but it should have been American soldiers were the greatest soldiers that this country's had.
So, as you look back on your life so far, who are the people who have influenced or impacted you the most?
Well, my wife did, sure.
Yeah.
And she made a Christian out of me. I mean, I thought I was a Christian before, but living with her, I found out I wasn't.
Yeah. That's great.
You know what that girl did before she sat there, get those kids off to go to school, and they breakfast time. This is, Lord, how was that thing went to?
What, the prayer? God is great, God is good.
Let us thank you.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the prayer?
Yeah.
God is great, God is good. Yeah. And we thank him for our food.
That was what it was about this is a great day. Thank you, Lord, for this wonderful day.
When we're older.
I'm glad in it.
This is the day that the Lord has made.
Yeah,
let us rejoice and be glad in it.
She gave that to those kids before they went to school.
Oh, wow.
She's that kind of a girl.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite memory or time period of your life? Anything that stands out?
After I get around to these picture things, I think it has to come up pretty tight that this, when this started out, there's two words she used for this gathering. Thanksmas.
Thanksmas?
It's going to either be Thanksgiving or Christmas. Every other year is going to be the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So those weren't family get-togethers, they were Thanksmases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she started out for, mostly for a Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was your favorite, that's your favorite memories?
Yeah, that was supposed to be what that thing was for, that all these 26 grandkids and all their kids, just, and amazing as it may seem, really a surprising number of those things are Christians today. Now what I say about the things that I'm the most impressed with my wife is that these daughters start having children. What do most people do nowadays when they have six children? They have one and then they quit. They won't have six kids. And I said, my wife is the kind of a woman that any of those kids, and the grandkids too, see what she is, and they're not afraid to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
More than one kid. They're just not afraid to. That goes right straight on to her back. It's just, she's that kind of a person to the world.
Yeah.
To this country.
Mm-hmm. Do you regret anything from your life?
Oh, got a lot of things I regret, yeah. But one of the biggest things I regret the most is that I ate too much chocolate. And you know why I'm so so feel that way about that.
Why?
I got GERD. I had GERD problem. And they examined me, and they found out when they went up, that there's a valve down at the bottom of your esophagus that keeps the acids from your stomach out of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any valve down there. And all that, they claim that that chocolate killed that bird down there going into your esophagus. And I've been very afraid of that for a long time. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I've regretted that for a long time.
I bet the chocolate tasted good when you'd eat it, though.
Still have trouble swallowing and everything.
Oh,
just terrible.
Yeah. Well, what advice would you give to my generation?
Make the Lord Jesus your God. I think everybody should. I mean, you get all kinds of religious stuff, but it all comes down to Lord Jesus when he went to the cross.
Mm-hmm.
That is the epitome of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, he takes the bad things away from everybody's record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't beat that with anything.
And so then, what do you believe is the most important thing in life?
The most important thing in life? Well, I guess live as many days as you can and make every day you have one that'll please God. That's about the best. I look at some of that history of those ancient Israeli people. They were fussing and fighting with one another all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get that picture. Making God the top thing. I just didn't get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Still don't.
And what do you hope to be remembered by?
Remember me by?
Yeah.
Well, I guess the best thing that I'd like to think of is the thing that all the communication I get from these 26 grandkids tell me how great they think I am.
Oh.
What more could you ask for anything any better than that?
Mm-hmm.
I would never write to you and tell you how great they think you are.
James Grigsby. Each day, his wife would tell their 6 kids that this was the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. It's quite clear that after hearing James' story, that he lived by these words his wife quoted as well. As he stated that the most important thing in life is to make every day you have one that will please God. James has had 4 different types of cancer, and one has left him now with just one leg, and it has undoubtedly been his faith that has gotten him through those hard times. James mentions his grandchildren's appreciation for him as the thing he wants to be remembered by, and I have to agree with them when they say he's pretty great. Hardworking, honest, humble, and a great sense of humor is how I would describe James Grigsby. And considering his biggest regret is eating too much chocolate, I'd say he's lived one sweet life indeed.
That's crazy.
The definition of my hunger is right by that chocolate. I say I'm the guinea pig for the whole damn thing.
Yeah. Well, you turned out.
I'm the guinea pig for the whole thing.
Oh, my God. Good job. You were a pro. You were really good.
Oh, really good.
For sharing your story.